The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Lots of starting pitching talk this episode. Some of it will be injury related. Some of it Garrett Crochet related. He made his spring training debut today. A pretty decent one. We will get into that. My name is Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Nick Diamond, Charlie Smith. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. Sox have a few injuries we need to discuss, but that's about it. But I'm doing all right.
I'm feeling really good. I've been so excited about Garrett Crochet. Everybody knows that I picked him as the 2025 Cy Young for the American League. I'm not going to stray from that. I think that's going to be my pick for the, you know, when we do the preseason episode. The guy has been nothing short of spectacular in theory, in mind, and now today. So if he can do this season, kids, sit down, relax, and enjoy the show.
I've got some questions and some takes on that, but I just something real quick. I was in Virginia Beach this weekend. They got maybe 4 or 5 inches of snow. That's massive for them. They just don't get much snow there. But this is a twice annual trip for me for tournaments and stuff. Whenever I check in at the hotel, the front desk guy is a baseball guy, and I've never really known if he's a Red Sox guy, but he knows a lot about the Red Sox, and every year he's asking me, how do you think they're going to be? In December, it's like, how do you think the winner's going to go? And I'm like, well, hopefully we get this guy, and this guy. In February, when we're back there, it's like, how do you think the season's going to go? And I always tell him, we're not going to be great. I don't think we're going to be good. My expectations aren't high. But this year, it was nice to say, I think we're a 93-win team. I think we're going to be fine. I don't know if we're going to win the division, but I think we're going to compete. And it was a lot of fun to have a different conversation with him. And yeah. So figured I'd share that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The Red Sox finally went out there and got some pitchers. Now the only thing we need to do is just extend Crochet. I mean, at this point, Nick, you and I have already, I think, mentioned this at least one time where I think you mentioned you'd be pretty peeved if he wasn't celebrating his 30th birthday in Boston, something like that. If I'm here, I mean, or 27th birthday, whatever it was, I think I said 30th birthday or longer. I can't remember, but it doesn't matter at this point. Him on this team exponentially makes us better, and it's not even close. He is going to sell tickets, put butts into seats, and actually make this team exciting. And to your point, Terry, this is the first time I can actually say I'm really excited for this team in 7 years. In 7 years. Because we no longer have to deal with the garbage. We no longer have to deal with the just the players that think that they should be here and aren't. You're now getting bona fide talent, and it's showing. And people are hopefully, you know, some of those youngsters are going to take a step up. This is going to be an exciting year.
I completely agree. I think this team is set up to be about 88 to 92 win team at the moment. I think they have a chance to compete with the playoffs, maybe in the division up there with the Yankees. I don't think any other teams besides the Orioles have a chance. I think the Blue Jays and the Rays are definitely going to be a step below, but I think the Red Sox do have a great chance to make the playoffs. And again, I'm super excited, just like you guys are, that this is finally a team we can actually expect to compete going into the season, not just the mid 80, 78 win team like we've had for the last 5 years. Super excited. So that, and I also agree with Garrett Crochet. Like, if he's not like extended by opening day, I'm still going to be really upset. It's priority number one. If that doesn't get done, it's still like you can grade this offseason way below than we would have, like, right now. Like, after Alex Bregman, we were super excited, but this still, Garrett Crochet has to get done. We're already over the luxury tax. Do whatever it takes to get done right now.
Well, as Charlie said, that is the elephant in the room, sort of. Well, there's another elephant in the room. We're not going to get into it this show, you know, with obviously the third base stuff. But lots of elephants in Boston this winter. But I guess in some cases it's a good problem to have. I don't know if the Crochet thing, though, is a good problem to have. And I just, it's the great unknown. And that's why I've said time and time again this winter, he wasn't really in my top three or four as far as acquisitions went. But as some of those guys came off the board, and then in the Mariners case, none of their guys were even on the board like we had hoped. You know, it was obviously a good move when it happened, but I don't know. Like, I have no idea how this is going to go. And we have no idea what Garrett Crochet's and his agents, you know, expectations are as far as where the Red Sox need to be for him to be willing to sign. There's a lot of risk on both sides, because Crochet can bet on himself, not sign anything, have tons of leverage next winter for a really big contract. I mean, you could be talking Garrett Cole money by next winter. And then, you know, so he can bet on himself, or he can get hurt and lose the bet. And then the Red Sox probably have most of the leverage at that point, at least in the short term. So, and then from the Red Sox perspective, in terms of risk, what if he gets hurt again? I mean, it sounds great to hear, you know, 99 to 100 miles an hour on the gun, but there's a little voice in the back of my head saying, I hope he doesn't blow it out again, you know? So that's the risk on the Red Sox side of it if they do take the plunge with a massive deal, a much bigger than expected deal.
I hear that, but at the same time, I mean, crap, so much has gone wrong for this team. It's about time that something went right. And before, like you just mentioned, if he, you know, gambles and we don't sign him now, this is going to eclipse, possibly, depending on how many strikeouts he throws, because it's not like he's throwing, you know, adding something to the ball like, you know, Garrett Cole was doing when he was in Houston. We all know they were doing something funny. Yeah, I mean, he's going to get stupid money, dumb money. And if there's a pitcher that they sign to 7 years ever again, it should be this guy.
I don't really think it matters how much money they give him. You're over the luxury tax. What more can you lose? You might as well go all in for the next 2 or 3 years here and then reset again. When Trevor Story, when Lucas Giolito, and a couple other guys come off the books, and then we'll see what happens then. You just go get Garrett Crochet signed at the top of the rotation. You can't lose him. You can't lose Walker Buehler. You can't lose Giolito all in 2 years. So you have to get one of these guys. No, I only really want Crochet signed long-term, but if it's $300 million, you might as well do it. Like, that's what he's going to get in the open market. That's what he kind of deserves. So he's probably the one or two best left-handed pitchers in the game, and just get it done no matter what it takes.
It's interesting, you know, with the money situation. I don't know if it's money or years that he wants, because if he just wants a 5-year deal and then hit free agency at 30, which in his case, if he's piling up the strikeouts, if he's leading MLB in strikeouts, or even just like top three in strikeouts every year, he's going to be a highly coveted guy at 30 years old. He'll blow the Corbin Burns contract from this year out of the water, I feel like. And so that's part of the great unknown. Like, what does he want? Or does he want that 8-year deal right now? And that scares me. The years scare me more than the money, I would say.
You're eventually going to have to make a decision, and you're eventually going to have to make the call of, okay, cool. Do we take a chance? Do we take that risk? We've already made risks taken risks by giving these pretty handsome contracts to offensive players and now we're realizing, I think, more than ever, and I think the rest of the fan base is going to realize it too if they haven't already, that's not where you should be putting the money. You got to start putting into pitching. Pitching is a premier position. Very few teams have two elite pitchers. The Dodgers are an exception to the rule because they're just spending ungodly amounts of money. But I mean, when I think of pitchers that have, or excuse me, teams that have elite pitching more than two stars, you can count them on one hand, including the Dodgers. And the first team that comes to mind is the Mariners. You know, they're going to be one of the teams that I think you can't sleep on. And if some of those young players that they have on the offensive side can take a step up, and Julio Rodriguez can figure it out again, because I don't know what happened to him. He took a huge step back. So I hope it wasn't like, I got the bag, now I can relax. I think he needs to get his head right, and he's going to, you know, go back to dominating again. But the Red Sox without Garrett Crochet are a middle team. They're good, but they're not great. And Crochet makes this team great. He really does have the ability to take this team to another level.
Another thing real quick here. I'm just trying to go through the roster to see exactly how much comes off the books next year. But just at quick glance, if Bregman comes off the books, and by the way, if Anthony and Campbell are both studs, I'm going to be rooting for that Bregman money to come off the books. Because, I mean, you're in fantastic shape if both those players pan out, they stay healthy. And in a perfect world, then Marcelo Meyer comes up and you're even younger and cheaper at that point. But here's just a quick rough estimate. Bregman's salary is a $30 million cap hit, despite being, you know, a $40 million deal or whatever you want to call it, you know, before the deferrals. So you got 30 from Bregman, 20 from Giolito that could come off the books. That one's a little tricky, though. We'll get into that when we do the rotation. $10 million from Chapman, $20 million from Buehler. So that's $70 million potentially coming off the books. And without, well, we'll get into that later. So as far as getting back to Crochet, that just speaks to my point where it's not the money. It's the years. He probably will have Tommy John another time, I feel like, at some point in his career. He's 25, and theoretically he's going to pitch another 10 to 14 years, depending. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to go on this tirade no matter how it shakes out. Well, I mean, if the contract isn't what I like, I'll be bummed if nothing gets done. But any more thoughts? Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the payroll is concerned, there's upwards of 50 to 75 million that could potentially come off the books. Giolito's making close to 20 million if he's not making 20. Walker Buehler got the... if I'm not mistaken, he got the same amount of money as the QO, right?
Yeah.
So that's $40 million right there. Chapman is 10. Trevor Story is still here. Bregman, in theory, could potentially come off as well if he ends up, you know, having a stupid good year. But you also have there's like two or three other players. Liam Hendricks, I don't think he's back after 25.
Oh, true.
So there's
that's another.
You know,
10.
There's a lot. There's a lot of holes here. So as great as it could in theory be, that only adds more pressure. If you're Garrett Crochet, you have even more leverage. Like, cool, you guys have the money. If you want me to stay, pay me. You know, so you think about it from like a financial standpoint, and baseball's a business. You've seen players treat the same way that some owners are too. You know, there was something that Jeremy had said on a prior show. I can't remember which one it was, but the whole process of like arbitration, that is the like definitive, you know, answer for baseball as a business. You're saying you're worth this much, and your team, your boss, is basically saying you're actually only worth this because of X, Y, and Z. So there's a lot of money that's going to come off. So it really does apply even more pressure for the Red Sox to get this done and to show, him that this is the place that he should be for the next 7 to 10 years of his career. I don't know what that contract's going to look like. And maybe you do have to, you know, offer some incentives of like backloading it, but you could eat up a lot of arbitration with him, because what's, he doesn't hit arb three or four until what, next year or the year after that, right? Isn't it, is arb three next year, arb four the year after that, or no, depending on, it depends on how much service time he has. And I don't remember, because it's either 4 years or 3 years of arbitration for Crochet. He might only have three. And if that's the case, you eat up arbitration and give him another 6-7 years. And then you don't have to worry about an elite starting pitcher right there. Done.
Yeah, he's, I guess he was arb one this year, or was that last year? He's definitely a free agent after 26. Let's put it that way.
So then he'd be, all right, so he's arb, I'm looking at it right now. He is arb three, 2026.
Okay.
No, excuse me. He's arb three, 2027. So we have him for two more years before becoming an unrestricted free agent in 2028. So really, through 2027, Crochet's here. But you'd be a fool to just give him garbage pay. Because if the expectation is for him to sign a long-term deal, you're going to have to pay the guy. And you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. So
baseball reference is showing 2027, and I'm fairly certain that's correct. 2027, he's a free agent.
Yeah, so after the 26th season.
Yeah. So it's only 2 years.
I thought he had two more years. Either way, you still got to get him. You can't not get him at this point. This would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, you might have been the one to say it too, but I feel like the job is just not done if you don't extend him. You've come so close, and if you go that far and don't just get to that final finish line, you just didn't get the job done, especially if in 2 years he walks away and you gave up the package that you gave.
I think what happened here, see, I've said recently that the deal never should have been executed without the framework already in place, without the, you know, the ballpark estimate being agreed on. And I think what happened here was, I think the Red Sox really did want Max Fried. I think he was high on their list. It didn't go their way. It got into somewhat of a bidding war, and then the Yankees gave him an extra year, and he chose the Yankees. And then the very next day, the Red Sox acquired Crochet, and I think it was in part kind of a knee-jerk reaction type thing to the Fried situation, and I think they just rushed into the trade and said, we'll deal with it later. And they might be finding out right now. I mean, we're not really getting a lot of details, and perhaps that's a good thing. But I don't know if it's going well, or the way the Red Sox had it mapped out in their head the day they made the trade. So we'll see, but hopefully it gets done. And a lot of these things, just so you know, the audience is aware, a lot of times it doesn't really get resolved until literally the final week of spring training. And in some cases, it's been opening day when that all drops.
The other elephant in the room, as you're so eloquently pointing out earlier, this whole business with Rafi Devers is not helping. It really is not.
No.
Because if this is the only problem, then it's like, okay, cool, let's just figure it out, you know, feel it out and whatnot. Now you're feeling it out with, you know, there's a fire in the background, for lack of a better term. You have to now put out two things, and it's, one is not helping the other, and it would be wonderful if both could be settled in the next week or 2 weeks. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's going to be the case.
We'll get into later in the week the third base situation, but somebody's got to be penciled into the lineup there every day. So, I mean, we'll see how the pattern plays out. Nick, any more thoughts on Crochet?
No, just it has to get done no matter what if it doesn't. But I'll give it to opening day. I think things will get talked about in spring training. He did look great today, struck out the side on the first. But he, if it doesn't get done by opening day, it's a disaster. I mean, that sounds harsh, but it's really, I expect it, and I think we all expect it. It has to get done. So if it doesn't, it's just a failure. And I don't think he signs with us if it's not by opening day. So if this goes to the All-Star break and he dominates, there's no way he signs an extension next year or at any time. So I think if it's not done by opening day, it's a lost cause.
I mean, if he wins the Cy Young, as Charlie is saying, or is even top three or four, I think you throw the bag. You just have to decide next year, do you want to pay a 26-year-old pitcher full market value? And I think you do where he's 26, but, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I'm glad this front office at least lived up to their promises as late as it got before those promises were met. So that's good, and that's why I haven't been trashing Kennedy or Breslow in recent days. But they haven't won me back. I can't sit here and say with confidence that this front office is gonna effectively solve stuff or resolve stuff, rather. So
they have to earn it.
We'll see.
They've got to earn it.
We'll see with Crochet, but just a couple observations, as you pointed out. Struck out the side today. He should be, you know, barring injuries, he probably will lead Major League Baseball in strikeouts if he pitches 180 innings. I think he's going to lead MLB. And do you think, can he break Roger Clemens' strikeout record? It's either 20 or 21 strikeouts.
It's 20 strikeouts, and Clemens did it twice. The last person to strike out
twice.
Yeah. Ooh. So, right. The last person to strike out 20 was Max Scherzer.
Okay.
Scherzer, I think, had 20. And then the last one who had 20 before that, I think, was Randy Johnson or... I think it was Randy Johnson. I don't think Kerry Wood ever struck out 20 in a game.
Kerry Wood did.
Okay. It was Kerry Wood or Randy Johnson. And Randy Johnson, I mean, he's just an absolute force. The guy was just a tank. I'm pretty sure he had 22 or 20 as well, not 22 strikeouts. But Pedro's record, if I'm not mistaken, is 17 strikeouts against the New York Yankees, and he one hit the Yankees, and the only hit he gave up was a solo shot to Chili Davis at Yankee Stadium. And that was in the late 90s. I think it was like 98, 99. And he just packed their lunch, sat them down, and shut 50,000 people at Yankee Stadium up. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I remember watching the game, and if I'm not mistaken, it was on ESPN.
They didn't lose that game.
It was amazing.
There was a weird Pedro game where he lost.
We
okay, so we won that one.
I think we won. I'm going to check right now because I remember watching it when I was little, and I was like, he just blew them away. It didn't matter who it was, destroyed everybody, and he made them look like children. It was incredible. Vintage Pedro.
I thought there was like a game where Pedro even went into the 10th inning and we lost the game. So maybe that wasn't it, but there was a weird one.
He did do that in the early 90s, but it wasn't.
It wasn't.
I don't remember if he did. No, I think he did it for Montreal back in the day, I think it was Montreal that he did it.
Okay.
I'm trying to find that game, by the way. Give me a beat. All right. September 10th, 1999. One hits the New York Yankees and strikes out 17. Masterclass performance. 3-1 Red Sox victory over the Yankees.
Okay.
It was incredible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad year for us, if I remember. Didn't we get to the LCS?
99? We probably lost to the Indians. It was just that decade where the Indians always knocked us out.
Okay. Yeah, that was like the first magical era to me. I was more fair weather back at that time, but I don't know, just prime Pedro in Boston. Like, that's the first time the Red Sox felt special to me in my lifetime, not being old enough, you know, to remember the 86 season.
Right.
But Yeah. And then the 99 All-Star game also, he struck out McGuire and Sosa back to back.
He struck out five of the six guys.
Yeah.
It was absolutely insane. Ted Williams was there, was shaking everyone's hand, and you saw professional ball players like our idols in the 90s looking like us. Eight, 9-year-old kids just like, oh my God, I'm meeting baseball Jesus.
And Pete Rose,
he
I think
that good
was allowed to participate for some reason. I think he was part of the pregame.
I don't know what he did. I just looked it up for 99. The Red Sox ended up getting knocked out by the Yankees. The Yankees won the World Series in 99. That was when Atlanta was also a superpower. Yeah. But we actually beat Cleveland that year because Cleveland had our number for years. It didn't matter. They had an absolute juggernaut of a squad. But the Cleveland Indians always had to deal with the Yankees.
Right.
If the Yankees weren't there, the Cleveland Indians would have gone to the World Series plenty of times.
Yeah, they had a great team in the 90s. I think they went to the – yeah, they were – did they play the Marlins? That was the 97 World Series.
97 was Marlins.
Yeah, they lost to the Marlins in 97.
Yeah.
And the Braves in 96.
The Braves won the World Series in 94, 95. Yeah. And then the Toronto Blue Jays were 92, 93. 94 was the strike year. There was no World Series, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Twins were 91. Okay, so. The Braves just kept losing.
right. Yeah. But they did win one in the 90s. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah. That was fun. Like I said, you know, baseball, even being a Fairweather fan, it was really fun in the 90s.
One more thing on Crochet. Can we just give like a special shout out for the fact that the guy's already slinging 97, 98 mile an hour bombs into that strike zone, and he's just making kids look foolish. If you're not major league ready or you're not going to be on a major league team, he's going to make you look like a 5-year-old. And Seidon Rafaela with an absolute missile to ensure that Crochet did not have an earned run in this game.
Right. Yeah.
If you haven't seen the play, watch it, children. It's incredible. It's awesome.
I don't want to get into him that much, but if Rafaela somehow ends up being a stud this year and figures out the plate discipline, I just feel like, man, we're so loaded. But especially because you need that right side of the plate to develop, even with the Bregman acquisition. You just need to be solid on that side. So he could be a key to that. But all right, let's get into the rotation real quick. So we feel good about Crochet. We feel pretty good about Houck. We feel pretty good about Buehler. And all in terms of health. Let's just frame it that way. Giolito hasn't really been ramped up yet. He's going to face live batting practice, I think, Monday or today for the listening audience. So we'll see if he gets ramped up in time. I mean, they haven't really said he's in any jeopardy of not making his first turn through the rotation, but I don't think it's set in stone yet. Brian Bayo concerns me a little bit because he's got shoulder soreness. Now, you can say, well, you know, he's just not ramped up yet, but he was working out quite a bit with Pedro Martinez. So I think he should be ready to go. So I don't know if his pitching program is being managed right throughout the winter. And then lastly, and perhaps most concerningly, Cutter Crawford is going to miss a while, according to Alex Cora, and may need knee surgery. Apparently, he tweaked his knee on his third or fourth start last year. And that affected his velo at times. He was up and down. I never got any impression he had any lower body problems going on. So I don't know. So, Nick, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts about that back half of the rotation?
I'm still not super worried yet. Bayo, I think, will be okay. It sounds like he will at least... if he misses time, it'll be a start or two. Cutter Crawford does look serious. I feel like it's just going to – they've been talking about surgery, and you don't mention surgery if it's not like a high possibility that it's going to happen. So I'm kind of worried that's going to happen. But if Giolito somehow doesn't start off fine, if Bayo has to miss more time than two or three starts, I think they'll be okay with like Quinn Priester or, you know, Criswell for the time being. So I'm not overly worried. I think the depth's okay. But if it gets any worse than that, if one of the other guys go down, it's going to start getting thin. So I think it's going to be okay for now, but we'll see. I know they had they signed a couple relievers in the last few days, so at least some sort of depth, but it's not going to help much in the rotation. But yeah, I'm okay for now, even if it's Quinn Priester or somebody like that starting as the fifth guy, just for a few days, a few starts to the rotation.
So I want to talk about Crawford for a second, because I know I talked about this last year and I brought it up on one of the shows and I don't remember which ones. If someone has the time to go look for it, have fun. He started the year off 21 and a third innings, only allowed one earned run. And that was the first like three games of the year. And then that's when allegedly the injury happened. Later on down the year, he went another three games and didn't allow a run. And he won all three of those games. The next game after he went another 21 innings without allowing a run, he got absolutely destroyed by the Dodgers. And I won't forget it because I watched that prime time and it was awful. He just got shelled. He gave up five home runs and it didn't matter who was hitting against him. The next game after that, same thing. Yankees destroy him. So if the issue was that bad last year, why didn't we shelve him? What were we doing? Did we learn nothing from the Chris Sale debacle? Chris Sale went down. We postponed the surgery. He missed the whole season. And then he got moved for a bag of peanuts and, you know, Grissom. Great. Awesome. I was excited about it. And I got egg on my face for that one too. He really needs to take a step up this year. I'm just going to scream. And with this one, if this is an injury and it's just coming to light now, we learn nothing about the whole injury situation. We learn nothing. If this was a problem, this surgery should have happened in July or August so that he was ready for the beginning of the year. I couldn't give two you-know-whats if you're not here for all of last year. And on top of that, now he hits Super 2 status. So he's getting a pay bump too, one way or the other. So we screwed ourselves there too. That's frustrating. As far as the rotation, I think you got four, maybe all five arms set. Crochet, Walker Buehler, Brian Bayo, Tanner Houck, regardless of that situation, I still think you have to put him in there. And then Lucas Giolito. I know that I'm probably on Lonely Island, but I was super pumped about it last year. And one of our former co-hosts said the same thing. We're both on, you know, Lonely Island together, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. We can't wait for Lucas Giolito to do what he's going to do. And then he gets injured, doesn't pitch all season. But we didn't wait 3, 4, 5 months to have the surgery playing, you know, tiddlywinks. It's just stupid. And then I don't know if you want to talk about the bullpen after this too, but I want to talk about that.
We're going to, the next show, we will almost entirely focus on the bullpen. I agree totally though with the Crawford thing. I mean, this Red Sox organization does a terrible job managing injuries.
So bad.
And you didn't necessarily have to do it in July or August, but at least September, October, get it done. And even if it costs him, you know, until June, get it done. I don't know what the recovery time is. It's patella related, so it's not an ACL, but I'm not an expert with that stuff.
I'm looking it up right now because I want to know.
No, it's definitely a patella injury. I think it's probably a 6 to 8 week thing, maybe 12.
Okay, here you go. Ready for this? For a was it a fracture, dislocation, or tendon tear?
Probably a tendon.
Okay, so a tendon tear, a mild tear, can take up to 6 months to heal. We'll see you in 2026 if that's the case. What's the point? You'll likely need physical therapy to regain range of motion and strengthen your muscles. No kidding. And the recovery time depends on the severity of the tear. Well, if you had that in the third game of the season and you pitched all year, I'm going to let people figure it out and connect the dots. I don't think it's just a partial tear. It's probably really bad. I'd love to know what level of morphine and cortisone he was taking to pitch through that kind of pain. But I mean, yeah, that would explain why you lost like four ticks on your fastball and they were playing home run derby against you in LA. I don't blame you. Like, I appreciate the fact that you're trying to grind, but you're of no service. You're not helping the team. It's a hindrance to the team if you can't pitch. Like, you coming out every fifth time and pitching four or five innings and getting shelled for four runs, giving up three home runs, that's not helping the team. We can find, you know, Rich Hill to come off of, you know, for the 15th time in his career to come off for four innings and get shelled and he's not injured. I'd rather you recover.
I mean, that's totally common sense. That's all that is. So we'll see. I mean, luckily we have the depth now. Cautiously optimistic. You've got Priester, Fitz, and Criswell to, you know, that can probably hold down a number five spot. So it doesn't really rely on Crawford. I mean, I was trying to put Crawford in trade packages all winter. So, I mean, it wasn't critical, but it's just annoying they didn't handle stuff right. Giolito, we mentioned him. Now, the interesting thing for him is that his vesting option kicks in at 140 innings. He'll get it'll trigger a $14 million team option for next year. Or, well, not even a team option. I think the player gets the $14 million. So I'm just wondering, like, in the back of my head, you know, Mr. Conspiracy Theory, are they like intentionally gonna maybe not start him on time to try to keep the innings close to 140, and we'll see what happens. If he comes back and he's just not pitching well, if he's just 2022, 2023 Lucas Giolito, healthy but not effective, they can easily make sure he doesn't get to 140, but
right.
It's something to watch.
Sure. I mean, I remember the Hanley Ramirez thing. If he didn't play X amount of games, he wasn't going to get the player option for the following year. He got released and that was that. And then when he got picked up, I forget if it was by the Angels or whoever, but he still didn't hit that threshold and he didn't get the money. He would have to miss 2 months of baseball in order to not pitch. Like, you figure four to five starts a month, call it nine starts. One, you get four, the other, you get five. You're probably getting 32 to 33 starts, assuming he pitches five plus on the average every game. 23 starts at 5 1/3. What's that? 120, 125 innings? Yeah, 122 innings. Give him an extra two starts, 25 at 5 1/3. He's still not at 140. He'd have to miss 2 months of baseball. Or not be pitching for 2 months of baseball, however you want to look at it. But here's the thing, too. If we're going to talk about Giolito, and I want him to succeed, I've been a huge Giolito supporter. You need him to pitch, and you need him to pitch well if you want this team to succeed in the playoffs. I'm totally cool blowing past him, giving you that option if you end up being an absolute monster and you pitch deep into the playoffs, too.
That's a great point, because we want him. That's absolutely correct. We want him to pitch well because A, we're going to be better, and B, if he's a number two or a number three, I mean, there's still a possibility he could be an ace again. I would say that's slim, but if he's an effective middle of the rotation pitcher and you can get him next year for $14 million, that's really good. Alex Cobb just got $15 million. So from, right. I forget who. But so that was the Tigers actually that gave him that, and just came to me. But so it's in everybody's best interest that he's solid. But if he's not, I can see some maneuvering go on. And then also don't forget, you're getting Patrick Sandoval next year. You know, back from, he may be on innings limits because I doubt he'll be ready to pitch before August this year. So I don't know if that's really enough of a ramp up to get him to 180 innings next year, but it's going to be interesting for sure. Nick, any more thoughts on them?
No, just that we absolutely need Giolito to, get to 140 innings, because with Cutter Crawford probably out for a while, whatever that means, but he's definitely not going to start the season on the opening day roster. I think Lucas Giolito is going to have to make a bulk of starts at least until August, and then we'll see what happens there. I think he will 100% will get to 140 innings unless he's actually hurt. So I think it's pretty much a given that he stays. He doesn't come off the books.
There's also another way that you can get there. And you mentioned Patrick Sandoval. What's he getting next year? What was the contract for Sandoval? I can't remember.
I think it's 12. It's 18 overall, but I think 12 of it next year.
Next year. So that's right, because the Red Sox love donating. we love paying for players that aren't going to play. It's just adorable. It's really frustrating. I don't have a lot of like faith in Sandoval. He's going to be 28, 29 next year, and he doesn't scare me. He doesn't intimidate anything. I'm really okay with the idea of tinkering with the six-man rotation. If you have a six-man rotation, you in theory can keep Giolito under 140 and have him pitch every single start of the season if he's able to. And when Cutter Crawford does come back, that sixth man totally works out. If it does take until end of July, beginning of August, you have 2 months. That means you got what, April, May, June, July. That's 4 months. You're probably getting 22 to 24 starts, assuming he makes every single one of them. And if you have to do load management where he misses a week every month, you're still under the 140 threshold. There's absolutely a perfect window where you can do that, but they'll still, it's an option, right? It kicks in if he hits 140, but it's an option before that.
Honestly, I forget.
I don't.
It's a vesting option if he gets 140. So
I hope he does it in shoves, as Nick would say. I hope he shoves this year and throws, 170 innings, strikes out 220, goes back to vintage Giolito. Because if you have him, Crochet, Walker Buehler, and then Tanner Houck and Brian Baio even take a small tick up in ability, dude, you got 70 wins in your rotation alone.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's possible.
All right. So I guess we'll wrap on that, but we'll try to stay abreast as far as, developments, benchmarks, when they go from long toss to actually getting into games. So we'll see how that goes. We'll be back tomorrow to do the bullpen. That got a little bit interesting over the weekend with Adam Ottavino. So we'll try to map out who do we think could be in and who will be out. So stay tuned for that. Have a good start to your week. Take care.